Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today to answer your gardening questions, our own green team, Greg Ward and Fred Breglia. Greg runs Ward's Nursery, a lawn and garden resource in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Fred Breglia is director of the Landis Arboretum and certified arborist, and he's the Landis Arboretum's in Esperance, New York. If you have any tips or strategies in the garden, we'd of course love to hear them. And if you have questions, Fred and Greg are on hand to help make your garden grow. We welcome your calls, 800-348-2551. It's 1-800-348-2551. Greg, Fred, welcome back to Vox Pop. Nice to have you guys here again.
Oh, it's great to be back.
Thanks for having us.
Things are growing now, eh?
Things are definitely growing.
Our garden's looking good. We heeded your advice and waited to plant the vegetables until after Memorial Day. I think that's what you guys said.
That's a traditional time slot.
There and when I say we, of course, I mean my wife.
Right.
But
of
course. I did.
Did you supervise?
I had a drink on the patio and watched. And it's look. She planted the usual stuff, tomatoes and whatever else, but pumpkins this year.
Great. Oh, yeah?
Why pumpkins?
They're fun. Pumpkins are fun.
They can be a lot of fun.
It's pretty amazing to see a pumpkin just sort of appear out of nowhere. You will remember this and say, wow, that was fun.
They can get huge.
But I mean, how big can they get in a small garden?
I mean, it depends on how much water you give them.
Yeah.
Big part of growing giant pumpkins is, and there's a lot of other factors, but a big part of it is actually an incredible amount of water.
Well, I said, if you're going to grow pumpkins, then I expect you to make a pumpkin pie. She said, this is not the kind that you make pumpkin pie out of. I didn't know there were more than one kind.
Pie pumpkins are usually called sugar pumpkins. They're usually those little, smaller than a basketball, bigger than a softball size.
Yeah.
And they have a little different, very kind of cute shape to them. Then there's your traditional pumpkin. There's a pumpkin in the Northeast here called a Howden pumpkin, and that gentleman lived in Sheffield, Massachusetts, developed that pumpkin. And that's kind of your traditional pumpkin as far as I think most people who know pumpkins are concerned.
Like a jack-o'-lantern?
Like a jack-o'-lantern.
Yeah.
And then there are those giant pumpkins, which are sort of a whole nother variety in and of themselves. They tend to be a little less orange, a little softer in color.
Yeah, a little yellow to them sometimes.
And fellow over by us, Peter Sweet, is very adept at growing very large pumpkins, and he allows us to display a few of his every year over there, which is pretty fun.
It's an odd skill. I must confess.
That is a lot of focus to grow a giant pumpkin. There's a lot of energy input into a giant pumpkin. But according to Peter, it's very fun.
All right, fair enough. Let's go right to the phones, and we go to Scott in Ballston Spa. Scott, you're first.
Oh, that's a nice honor. Thank you.
Sure.
I live in Ballston Spa on a fairly wooded lot with very sandy soil. I've got problem with lots of moss and also lots of ants. They both seem to really like the lot, and I'm trying to figure out how to attack the ants without contaminating my well, because we use well water.
Well, I think what you said, shady, wooded, so shady and sandy, those are the two reasons you have both of those things. The moss is tolerating the low light better than the grass, and the ants tend to find it much more amenable to live in sandy soil. So what you have, is something that maybe you shouldn't see as a problem. I mean, moss is something that doesn't have to be as mowed as frequently.
True.
And ants are always going to like that sandy soil, so to eliminate them once is going to be okay, but they will be back.
Yeah.
Are the ants a problem in your house? Are they like carpenter ants, or are just little ants all over the lawn?
They're just little mounds all over the lawn. They don't seem to come in the house much.
Yep. I mean, the thing is, it's sort of like Greg said, it's part of the natural environment. So the ants aren't really a problem. The fact that they are there indicates that, you're not using a lot of chemicals. You're not using pesticides and things like that. So that's a good thing. Moss sometimes can be treated pretty easily without any kind of chemicals. In fact, just building the turf helps to combat the moss. So, feeding, I don't know if you've ever done any supplemental lawn fertilizations, but
a little bit, but not a lot. No,
possibly using and I recommend organic products, but looking for some organic lawn food, dropping it down through you could do something you could do yourself real easy. Usually, you would recommend like aerating lawn, but if you're in a sandy site, that's really not going to be much of a factor.
Yeah,
so.
And opening up the light levels. You know, if it's shady, you know, the moss is going to perform better than most grasses. So if you are interested in getting grass and you are willing to cut down some trees, that would certainly boost the grass level percentage.
Or possibly just raising up the crowns of the trees by removing some of the lower limbs. Is going to let a lot of light in, and you know, sometimes you know, don't have to cut any trees down either. And you know, again, throwing down some supplemental fertilizer. And anytime you want to overseed with some lawn, you know, grass seed, you want to make sure it's a shade mix.
Okay, Scott, thanks a lot very much for the call. So, when's a good time to put feed on your lawn?
Well, you know, spring and fall.
Yeah.
But not summer?
You could do a supplemental lighter fertilization.
It's not summer yet. And temperature is really a big deal. So if it's hot and dry, fertilizing is really not recommended.
That's right.
September is often touted as the single September, even October in warmer counties. But September is like usually the best month to fertilize. It's just most people think about it in the spring.
Yeah, absolutely.
So spring is fine.
Okay, very good. Let's go to Tom in New Paltz. Tom, you're on.
Hi, gentlemen. I have a problem with I have two wet spots. No jokes, Ray.
Why would I make it?
I have two 40-foot by 40-foot areas on a big front lawn that get mostly sun. If I don't keep the grass, if the grass gets on top of these two spots, they must have a clay base, and I can't even drive the tractor through them because it's so muddy and so soggy. The grass, I just have to let it grow because there's nothing else I can do because I can't take the tractor in there. I thought about putting a picket fence around there and putting in some kind of garden where you need a lot of moisture for flowers or something to grow.
That's a great idea.
What flowers would grow there that needs small maintenance? Because I'm usually doing grass cutting and weed whacking and tree trimming the whole rest of the summer. What's maintenance free that I can put in there that has nice color?
Can you plant a tree? That's the first question I ask.
Like, excuse me?
Can you plant a tree in those spots?
I could. I have a big, giant weeping willow next to one of the wet spots.
Because like a nice river birch would look really nice.
Yep.
Or a red maple would be really nice. They would both give you a red maple would give you a fantastic fall color. And then Greg will tell you what to do with garden plants around that nice tree.
Yeah.
River birch and, excuse me, what was the other one?
River birch and red maple. That's the top two that just came to my head.
Red maple. Yep, will they dry the spot up?
They'll help to dry the spot up some. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
The bigger they get, the drier it'll get. You know, just take some time on those trees. But the idea of just not mowing and either you could either actually let what comes up what may, and it may be you know, pretty interesting that way. But if you go to, you know, your local garden center, you probably can ask them, you know, what are some wet tolerant woody plants, perennial plants that will work well there. And briefly, there are some, you know, some fun shrubs, a lot of shrub form dogwood. A little thing called button bush is really fun. That plant called clethra works really well in wet soils.
That's great for hummingbirds.
Yeah, it has a nice. These are all things that will also have some kind of fall or spring or summer interest.
Is that clethra?
Yeah, clethra. And then there's a whole series of perennials. These are herbaceous plants, non-woody plants that would tolerate that wet area. You know, in order to make a garden, regardless of whether it's wet or not, you're going to want to sort of eliminate what's there and replant, and then usually try to limit other things that are going to grow in. And so if you're planting new things, you want to allow them to grow and eliminate the competition or reduce the competition.
Yeah.
That's why I said, though, maybe you could just sort of let it go and see what you get as well. That would be the lowest.
It's grassy. It's a real strong, real strong spiny grass. It almost looks like
a
basketball with this grass shooting up out of it.
Oh yeah, Well, you know, those, if you don't mow it, you will get some woody things coming up in there as well.
Okay.
All right. Well, let us know how you did, Tom. We appreciate it. Let's squeeze one more call in before the break. Helga in Poughkeepsie. Helga, you're on Vox Pop.
Hello.
Hello.
I have a lot of old-fashioned bleeding hearts, and while they're very pretty when they're in bloom, then slowly the foliage dies down, and then I have these bare spots. is there any time where I just could cut off the remaining greenery?
When, usually you let them discolor. You let the foliage start to get pale first, and then you cut them down, yes.
I have to wait until they... What happens if I cut it down when they're still green?
You know, it's been an early spring, and they've been growing for quite a while, so it probably won't be much longer before they yellow. And so if it's getting close, you know, go ahead and cut them now. It's not the end of the world. They'll be fine.
Okay. Thank you.
Helga, thank you very much. Greg Ward and Fred Breglia are the guests today. It is The Gardening Show. Good to be back in the saddle again. More calls coming up.
Support for Vox Pop comes from Adams Fairacre Farms, Poughkeepsie, Kingston, Newburgh, and Wappinger. Trees, shrubs, blooming perennials, Adams-grown annuals and bedding plants, gardening supplies and advice. AdamsFarms.com. Historic Huguenot Street, New Paltz, 18th century French settlement with Dutch-influenced stone houses, a reconstructed 1717 church, burial ground, guided tours, programs, and events through October. HuguenotStreet.org. And the Montessori School of the Berkshires, a 40-acre LEED for school campus working to foster a challenging and creative academic environment for 18-month-olds through grade 8. BerkshireMontessori.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551 is the telephone number, 800-348-2551. Thanks to all of you who called in a pledge or pledged online. It was a great fun drive. As you may have heard, it ended yesterday, and we're happy to be back with our regular program schedule. Greg Ward is our guest. He's from Ward's Nursery. Fred Breglia, director of the Landis Arboretum, also a certified arborist. They are here to answer your calls. Now, Fred, you have a couple of short announcements.
Yes. Well, this coming up this Saturday, we have our annual garden party. It's always right around the summer solstice. So, it's we're going to be light until later part of the evening. And this year's garden party, tickets still available. We're looking for more people to come. And we have a live band featuring jazz, blues, and possibly a mix of some other types of music as well.
Beautiful.
It includes a silent auction, includes a bar. Includes dinner.
You had to be at bar.
Yeah, it starts at 4:30 and ends at 8:30 p.m. Tickets are on sale right now. They're $45. And like I said, the dinner is included. The bar is included.
And you guys have a
website. The music is included. Website, www.landisarboretum.org. Call us at the office tomorrow if you want, 518-875-6935. Come out and party with us in the garden. What else can I say?
Well, there you go. Let's go to Doe in Wendell. Doe.
Hello. I have a question about the color red being beneficial for plants. I've seen ads for red plastic mulch, and I would like to understand what the scientific reason why the color red should, especially if it's on the ground, and be reflected again up to the plants, how would that be beneficial to the growth of the plant?
You got that one, Fred?
Yeah, I'll take that question.
Fair enough.
Absolutely. Well, in general, the color red, and along with other colors, are certainly, you can track them back to, like, let's say, flowers and basic reproduction. And a lot of times flowers are a certain color because the pollinator, the insect that actually pollinates those particular flowers, looks for that spectrum of color, looks for that light. And so it attracts the pollinator that naturally would be attracted to the flower. Hence, reproduction happens and everybody's happy, especially the plants. Now, color mulch red, not exactly sure that there's any research that I'm aware of that would indicate that it would actually be better for your plant versus a brown mulch. But if it was a plant, let's say, that is red flowering, and you were certainly trying to attract more pollinators to that plant using red mulch, would that help some? Possibly.
Yeah, I think there is, and I apologize for not knowing, I think there is some specific benefit to red as a mulch, and I hate to admit this, it's because we do actually sell some. This plastic mulch that is red. Now, I cannot remember for the life of me. I cannot remember what the specific benefit is, but it is touted as beneficial as opposed to black plastic. That red plastic will,
I think it's
coming to me. I think it has to do with black. You know, black does overheat. I could be wrong, so someone else could call in and tell us about this. That, you know, black creates a lot of heat. Clear plastic doesn't allow for the inhibition of weeds, and somehow red does block the weed growth underneath without getting hot. But I could be wrong about the temperature thing.
Yep. The one thing I would point out, though, is I would recommend in general for plant health. I mean, I'm not really super familiar with the plastic mulches, but I recommend organic mulches, but not so much. I mean, I'm not saying that the plastic mulches wouldn't work as good as the organic mulches to suppress weed growth. Because it's probably
is that all mulch is designed to do? I mean, what?
No. The biggest factor of mulch is actually not just to suppress weed growth. You're also regulating temperature, as Greg said. You're also conserving water. But the thing that the organic mulches does, which is extremely good for the soil, is it creates a vertical action. So it actually helps to create really good soil structure. And if you think of soil structure as in a plumber, you're looking at the pipes of your house, and you've got air vents letting, you know, exhaust out of your septic system.
Yeah.
And you've also got water that's filtering all through your house. Well, there's a whole network of pipes in place in the soil that let water get right into the soil profile.
Ah.
And what actually happens with organic mulches is it actually creates a much, much better structure, will hold more water and also hold more nutrients.
I wasn't so much interested in the mulch thing. I don't need the mulch. I thought there would be a chemical reaction to the rays of the sun hitting the red and reflecting back on the plant that would have a reaction.
Yeah,
and
that's
what I was.
See, that makes sense
to
me, though, you know, but I don't know anything about this.
And
stuff.
I apologize for just not having that at the tip of my tongue. I think we should get back to her.
All right, give us a call. Yeah. Doe, give us a call next month if you haven't found anything, or even if you have, and we'll bat it around again, okay?
I'll try.
Thanks a lot for the call very much. Let's go to Joe in Poughkeepsie. Joe!
Hi.
Hello.
I recently bought my wife a beautiful rose bush, a climber. I don't remember the name of it, but we planted it in the ground finally after about 2 weeks, and the leaves started to turn yellow with black spots, and it doesn't look like it's doing very well. I don't notice any growth on it, any new growth, and the flowers, while they're budding and blossoming, some of them start to look rotten and they fall off.
So we're going to start from the beginning. It's in the ground in a sunny spot.
In a partially sunny spot. It gets about half a day's.
Good, strong half a day.
Half a day's good, strong sun, maybe
great.
Three quarters of the
and
day.
And it's in its own little mulch, whatever color the mulch is. It's in a nice open space that isn't competing with other plants, right? It has good air circulation.
Yes. Great. It's against the back of my house, the wall. And it's got a trellis to grow up on, and there's some morning glories and a clematis, but they're at least 2 or 3 yards away.
And this is a climbing rose?
Yes.
Okay. So it sounds like there was some stress, certainly either just after, you know, you purchased it, maybe while you purchased it, it was having some leaf issues that just sort of, you know, continued after you got it home. But generally, if it's fairly new plant and it was growing and looking good earlier this year, then the green stems that are sort of leafless right now still have the opportunity to resprout. The brown flowers need to be pruned out. If they're brown and old and finished, that's great. If they're brown and the buds actually never opened up and they sort of wilted over, that is a fungal infection that you definitely want to remove as much as possible.
That includes the leaves too?
So what you're going to do is, if this plant is, say, 18 to 24 inches high and a lot of the top is pretty much finished, you're going to want to take off maybe 6 or 8 inches of this plant.
From the top,
all the way around, bring it down. Any leaves that have fallen on the ground, ideally, when you're done with that, you're looking at several green stems that are alive and green, but maybe don't have a lot of growth on them. And then any leaves that fell on the ground, you're going to want to remove those. Take those away. They may have be harboring some fungal spores.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
You're then going to make sure that it's well watered, that it's moist. Okay. But you're going
to a lot of water.
Just one good thorough soaking, and then you're just going to want to wait. You're not going to want to water it again. You're just going to stand back and let it leaf out.
Okay.
Okay. We've gotten a lot of rain here.
Yeah.
Poughkeepsie.
Yep. Yep. You just, okay. I just want to make sure if you feel the ground is really wet, certainly hold off on the watering part, but okay. We just want to make sure that it's not dry.
Joe, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. Okay. Now, you know, Christy Carton, who answers the calls here, she knows a lot about a lot of things. And she wrote a note here. I assume this is from her. It says info. And then there's some sort of a drawing, and it says, Ray, info, red, ideal spectral color, inhibits heat. What do you think?
I was close, huh?
Yeah.
Not bad.
Not bad.
Sometimes you're lucky.
no less of a source than our call screener, so we're good to go.
All right.
All right, let's move on to Jan in Otis. Jan, you're up.
Hi, my name is Jan, and I'm a big Ward's Nursery fan.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and I have a question about my irises. My bearded irises, they seem to sort of over the years fade away so that the dark purples remain, but like the beautiful orange ones or the dark red ones seem to disappear. And I thought maybe they needed to be divided, but when I dug them up, they really weren't that thick. Do you have any suggestions?
So when you say they disappear, does the purple, do they revert to another color or they're just not blooming?
No.
They're just not blooming.
No, the green comes up, but there's no flower.
Yeah. So yes, you need to divide them. But dividing doesn't mean just kind of decongesting them when it comes to irises. It means getting rid of all of the older rotten tubers, the tubers that have sort of decayed and are older and kind of lying around. It also actually means adding nutrients to that area. So they're you know, a lot of tuber, a lot of growth, a lot of flower. So they're fairly heavy phosphorus users. So it's as a general rule, without doing a soil test or anything, it's recommended that you would add a granular fertilizer with some reasonable amount of phosphorus, that second number, into the soil. So you would take them up. Usually this happens in mid-July. Take them up, divide them, clean off all of the bad, older, rotten material, cultivate the soil, work in compost, work in that fertilizer, replant smaller, healthy sections. Usually you would cut the foliage back to about 6 or 8 inches high, spaced nicely so that they can expand, and in this case, very little or no water. It's one of those plants that you almost never have to water, and watch it take off.
Great. That's very helpful. Thank you.
Okay.
Yep. Jan, thank you. Fred Breglia and Greg Ward, our guests today. It's The Garden Show. Jill in Waterford. Jill, you're on.
Hi, gentlemen. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I told a friend of mine that the next time you guys were on, I would try to call in and ask this question.
Okay.
She has a tree in her front yard. It's not very big around the trunk as is, but it's spreading out, and it's starting to encroach on the windows in her living room. And she wants to cut it back, but doesn't really know how. And I had, in my naivete, suggested, well, maybe just cut it back at a joint, you know, where another branch comes off of it, so it won't look like it's getting chopped off. But we kind of want to know, as far as keeping the tree alive, how to cut it back without actually harming the tree itself.
Yeah, well... some of your advice there sounds like it actually was pretty decent. You do want to cut back to like an intersecting branch, perhaps. But the first thing I would say is, you know, it's really good that she inquired before just cutting, because pruning is one of the easiest ways to increase a plant's health and make things really nice and healthy and flower nice and produce fruit. It's also one of the easiest ways to mess plants up. By making improper cuts or cutting perhaps at the wrong point in their life or season. So in any case, if you're looking to cut a branch, you have basically a few guidelines. You want to remove the branch back to the point of origin That's choice one. Or cut it back to an intersecting branch that's based on an ISA, International Society of Arboricultural Rule. You're looking to cut back to a branch that's at least one-third of the size of the one you're removing. Or larger. So if you follow those two guidelines, that's certainly going to help. Now, you do need to identify what a branch collar is, because if you're cutting back to the point of origin, that means you're cutting back to either cutting a lateral branch back to a main scaffold branch, which means it would have more of a collar region there, or you're cutting a main scaffold branch back to a trunk, in which case there's a definite branch collar there. Now, the reason why the branch collar is so important is because that's the part of the tree that creates meristematic cells that will seal over wounds. And unlike humans, we heal wounds. Trees don't actually heal wounds, they seal wounds. And if they don't, then decay can get in and it can cause, you know, a hollowed out tree over time and cause some stem dieback. Or if you're cutting on the opposite side of things, if you're cutting too far away from the collar and you're leaving like a stub, then the stub of the branch actually acts almost like a cork would in a bottle. It prevents it from closing over, so the skin of the new skin or cells will try to close the wound, but it can't because the stub's there. So you want to make sure you know what a branch collar is, and so you know where to make the proper cut. You want to make sure that if you're cutting an intersecting branch back to another branch, you're cutting back to one that's at least one-third the size of the one you're removing. The one that you're cutting back to, if you're trying to get a branch that's growing away from a window, for example, don't cut back to a branch that's pointing right back at the window, because then the branch is going to
grow back in.
And it'll grow back into the window. And I will point out that on June 30th, I'm doing a pruning workshop at the Arboretum. It's Saturday noon, or 9 o'clock in the morning till 12 o'clock in the afternoon.
What's that date?
It's June 30th. It's a pruning workshop. And you can call the Arboretum or go to the website for details. And the cost is, if you're a member, $35. If you're not, it's $50. But either way, you'll learn everything you need to know to make proper pruning cuts.
All right, Jill, thanks very much for the call. Let's go to Dorothy in Albany. Dorothy, you're on with Greg Ward and Fred Breglia.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Sure.
I'm on my cell phone.
Be careful.
Okay. Yeah. I planted some raspberry plants for the first time. I never grew raspberries before, but a number of friends told me they were relatively pest-free and easy to grow. Hello?
Yeah. Hello, we can hear you.
Yeah, okay, you can hear me. And the other day, we saw a squirrel sort of up on its hind legs chomping on one of them, and I don't know if squirrels eat raspberries or if there's some repellent I should put around the plants. We've had a lot of issues with the squirrels, eating half our pear tree and stuff like that. Yeah. So I don't. Do they generally go after? I never heard them going after raspberries.
If are these newly planted raspberries, so they're fairly short?
They're for short, yeah.
Yeah. So you're not going to be looking for a lot of fruit this year. You do want growth, though. So if for some reason they're feeding on the new growth, that is somewhat of a concern because they'll stunt the plants, they'll slow them down. But if they're just looking for a few green berries that may have formed on there, you might want to just go out there and just cut them all off.
Cut all the berries off?
Well, I'm just suggesting that these are ways you can sort of inhibit the squirrel without and then allowing the plants to mature. But in general, those raspberries, as you should know, are going to grow to about, 4 or 5 feet tall and arch over and be quite, substantial even by next year. And by then, the squirrels won't be an issue. They'll just be, too much for them. They won't be able to climb them. But while they're small, if they're damaging the growth, you want to limit that.
Do any of those sprays work, those repellent things?
On squirrels, I've never seen any of the sprays do a great job. Maybe some of the pepper sprays, which, of course, if you're thinking of eating that fruit yourself, might kind of make it taste a little bad. So the other option would be netting of some kind, some posts and netting.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Posts and netting. Okay.
Yeah, that's what we use at our berry patch at home. We have blueberries.
I actually made a frame for the netting for the blueberries because I was afraid the birds would go after
the birds. Yeah, that's what we're protecting them from. Strawberry patch, too, same way. But I don't see why that wouldn't work quite well with squirrels. No one
squirrels
likes the netting.
Squirrels and fruit trees, a real problem. Peaches, pears, they just love to eat them all. Squirrels and blueberries, if you net them, it usually is not a big deal. Raspberries, I've never had an issue with squirrels and raspberries, so I think it might be temporary. Okay.
I think so, too.
Okay.
Dorothy, thanks so much for calling, and it's Sean's turn. Sean, you got about a minute here before the break. Go ahead.
Okay, quick question here. We have water runoff from the roof, and it's going into our garden. right by the sliding doors, and we open the sliding doors, and it smells like a cesspool out there. The standing water is rancid. Is there something I can spread over that water to neutralize it or kill the smell?
Like getting it to drain. Can you channel it?
There's no way of channeling it. It's right up against the house. It's a garden that's enclosed by the house, and there's no way. There's concrete under the soil.
It sounds like you're building up organic matter wherever the water is puddling, and that organic matter is breaking down anaerobically. So that's what smells bad.
Yeah.
So you need to eliminate the organic matter. So you need to clean something out. And then, whatever way you like to sterilize the water would be a possibility. A little bleach in there. I don't know where this water's going afterwards, but if it's literally
it's
pool.
It's seeping into the ground. But the thing, like I said, it smells like a cesspool, so our only concern is to get rid of that smell. So you say pour bleach in the water?
I said that tentatively because I don't know where that should be going. I thought it was maybe contained in like a little bird bath or something.
No, it's the ground.
I would dig out the area, find the organic matter, remove the organic matter.
You mean there's just soil, just plain soil. There's nothing there but soil.
Well, another option would be can you create an in-ground how a French drain would be horizontal, only this would be vertical. So you basically,
the only problem is this concrete, this soil on top of a concrete slab.
Right, so you need to.
This is a house in the 1800s, and
I gotcha.
Building was done. I was wondering if I put sprinkled some lime in there. Would that do anything?
Yeah, you said. I mean, the situation's not good.
If
you have soil on top of concrete and it has no way to drain, then basically you're going to have an anaerobic condition, which is going to create a foul smelling stench. So you've got to create either a drain, or you do what Greg says, and you get rid of the organic matter. It means you can't have anything on top of the concrete. So it's one or the other, but you've got to either have it. Okay. If you don't drain it, and you have organic matter,
it's always going to happen.
It's going to be a battle.
Organic matter, meaning the
soil on top of the concrete.
The soil.
Okay.
Right.
All right. Yeah, so one or the other. But, if you could figure out a way to make a drain, rupture through the concrete, that would probably eliminate most of that for you.
We got a break here, gentlemen. We're going to take a quick one. 800-348-2551. We'll be back with the home stretch on The Gardening Show in a moment.
Support for Vox Pop comes from the Phantom Gardener Nursery, Rhinebeck, New York. Dedicated to helping gardeners go green with native plants, organic seedlings and supplies. Organic from the start, sustainable for the future. ThePhantomGardener.com. Hudson Valley Foot Associates, podiatric physicians and surgeons treating foot problems with offices in Ulster, Dutchess, Columbia, Orange and Delaware counties. HVFA.com. And The Linda, presenting the poetry, music and spoken word of Urban Guerrilla Theater, Saturday, June 28th at 9 p.m. TheLinda.org for more information.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551. Fred Breglia is here, also Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery. Greg, you have anything cooking over at Ward's Nursery?
Well, for those of you with laurel root, it is time to redeem them, and they know what that means. That will be for the next couple of weeks. But otherwise, I'd just like to talk about the weather. And we've had, as several people have said, we've had several springs this year. And I think summer is finally coming. I think we've been pretty darn lucky in having sort of spring after spring, March, April, May. Every month was a new spring. Finally starting, though, to warm up, and we're going to get some nice sunny weather, dry.
Yes, we are.
All those things you were worried about should start to really grow and take off if they aren't already, especially those warm weather things like your tomatoes and peppers. And just to remember that we're going to go into another sort of mode, which is to, even though it has been raining quite a bit, that things will get drier. And you'll want to do things like cut your lawn a little less frequently, water those newly planted woody plants, especially trees and shrubs, on that sort of regular cycle, weekly cycle. We've been able to ignore a lot of that, and I just want to remind everyone.
Good. Let's go back to the phones and to David in Johnstown. David.
Oh, thank you. I think you may have touched on this earlier, a similar situation. I bought 10 balsam seedlings, and I planted them, and they all are dying except for one, this fungus. And, the quills or whatever, the thing fell off. I've used 2 cans of the copper spray, and it seems not to be of much help. What do you suggest?
If they're sort of orange or defoliated now completely?
Yes.
And there's no green growth of any kind?
Only on the one, or maybe maybe a couple of others have a little, chartreuse green.
And you planted them this spring?
Yes.
A bare root plant or a little rooted thing?
Yes.
So it doesn't sound good. It sounds sounds like they're pretty much done, with the exception of that one. If it was a fungus, and Fred can certainly elaborate, it was cultural. It happened because they were stressed in some way, possibly planted too deep, possibly too wet, too dry, one of those kinds of things. Not that they came or had some kind of blight that sort of swept through. That usually doesn't happen. So I would recommend trying it again next year, but just maybe getting a good handle on location, depth of planting, and proper watering.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Bye.
David, thank you. Let's go to Bonnie in Clifton Park. Hiya, Bonnie.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Welcome aboard.
This is about my elderly mother's property. It's her whole garden and everything has deteriorated. And my concern is on the border. She lives up on a hill and there's a dry rock wall. And it's fine. But there's all old lilacs and now all kinds of other shrubbery trees, actually, maples growing in there. And we need the privacy between, on the property line. And originally I had someone cut down all the lilacs and at least half of them, and all these saplings. But, of course, they're growing up again now. And I'd like to rejuvenate the whole area, but I don't know what I should do.
Well, basically, all the things, lilacs rejuvenate really well.
Yes, and they have some of those.
Yep.
But there's an area that is right on where, she would see the neighbors, and so I'm not cutting those down, but the saplings are growing larger and larger, and I'm afraid that they're going to deteriorate the wall. I'm not sure what's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you definitely need some landscape maintenance in there. Whether or not you get training to do it or you get someone in there that's reputable to come in and do some of that work, for you guys to at least get you caught back up. But it's just from your description, it just sounds like things are, needing to be structurally pruned and pruned correctly. And some things can be rejuvenated. Others may have to get pulled out. There may be some probably weed species growing up in there now. Those should be eliminated. So you're going to need some professional help or training to be able to manage that. It's not uncommon. Pretty much all of our landscapes need maintenance just like everything else. But that's what I would recommend, possibly, like I said, getting some training seeking the help of professionals. Now, a lot of times you can arrange to work with a professional, find a company that may do this with you and sort of train. You work with them and they train you what's going on. So that way, you're not perpetually needing to call them back. You learn sort of firsthand on your site from someone that knows what they're doing.
That's the problem, that this is in Herkimer County and there are very few people there. I had the people that mow her lawn. They did it, but they cut the lilacs down pretty badly. Yeah, so I had someone else, a tree person, come in and just cut everything right down to the ground. And, of course, all these little maples came back up again because it wasn't rooted. And I'm afraid, should I have everything rooted up?
If you're going to want to keep the lilacs and not the small trees and saplings, and they're coming up within the wall or near the wall, then cutting them is going to certainly, inhibit them from damaging the wall or heaving the wall if that's your concern. But it does sound like it's a fairly big job. I mean, we're envisioning this 100-foot wall. Maybe it's just 10 feet long. And
yeah, it's not. It's not a long wall. It's a small backyard.
I'm sure there are landscape contractors in the, phone book or the local paper. And that's who I would find, someone who lists themselves as a landscape design build firm someone who does tree pruning. It would be very adept at kind of solving that for you.
You could also look for the through the ISA. They have a website, International Society of Arboriculture, and you could search a local certified arborist near you. Some arborists don't deal so much with small shrubs. I deal with, all sorts of plants, but my job is really diverse. But looking for someone like that seems like would be a good way to start. If you can't find anyone, let me know at the Arboretum, and I could recommend a handful of people.
Yeah, I go there. I love the Arboretum. Yeah. I mean, I like to just walk around because it's so peaceful.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Well, Bonnie, thanks so much for the call. Let's go to Morgan in Berlin, or is it Berlin, depending on what state you're in?
Well, it depends on if you're from here, in which case it's Berlin, and if you're not from here, it's Berlin.
Are you in New York then?
Yes, we're in New York State.
That would be Berlin. Okay, you're up.
Yeah, right. I'm calling in response to the person who called earlier about pruning. Simply looking online for Alex Shigo and the Shigo method of pruning, Shigo, would give a lot of information in a hurry and very inexpensively. Oftentimes when you purchase a plant at a nursery like Ward's or some of the others, there will actually even be pruning instructions on the backside of the label of the plant. And so those are some ideas to get that information quickly and inexpensively.
Well, that makes sense, gentlemen.
Well, oh, yeah, I would say that Dr. Alex Shigo is an absolute wonderful resource to ever listen to. I had the privilege of taking a tree course from him years ago called Tree Autopsy.
Cool.
It was one of my favorite courses I ever took. A lot of what the International Society of Arboriculture has adopted as the standard pruning practices were research conducted by Dr. Alex Shigo. And I'll add also that the ISA also has a free website incorporating a lot of that information and a lot more at www.isa-arbor.com. And there's an incredible amount of pruning diagrams and things like that,
Morgan,
as well. So thanks for calling,
Morgan.
Yeah,
thanks a lot. We really appreciate it. Janie in New Milford. Janie.
Hey, Ray.
Hey.
It's Janie in New Milford. First of all, I just want to congratulate you all on a magnificent job on the fun drive. You guys are totally amazing.
Well, you know what? You're amazing, and everyone who called in is amazing. Otherwise, we would be bums. I got to tell you.
We're one big happy family.
It's true.
We are the WAMC family of listeners and staffers. I'm calling in reference to the lady who called in about the red mulch. It was ringing bells in my head when she was talking. I've seen this before somewhere, and I thought it had particularly to do with tomatoes, and from there my brain leapt to the gardener supply catalog. Sorry about that, Greg.
No, that's
good.
That's a great resource.
That's
really,
great.
I would appreciate it.
It is, and I grabbed my catalog, and sure enough, in the tomato section, red mulch boosts production. And what it says is, in university tests, red light is proven to boost fruit production for a more generous harvest.
Interesting.
Yeah, and what else is interesting is not for suppressing weeds. They're not recommending this product for weed suppression. It evidently lets enough UVs through to get the weeds germinating. But I thought if she's listening and wanted to pursue this further, she could go to their website, which is gardeners.com, and probably get more information as to how that stuff works. And
guys, I got to tell you something. Janie's going to come on the show next month. She's going to be on by herself.
And the only thing I really want to add is that the red mulch we're talking about is a film material. I think it can be made out of plastic, but actually made out of other things as well.
Uh-huh.
It is not, and I'm just including all of us. It is not that wood bark mulch that is dyed red.
Yeah.
We're not talking about that.
No, no. This Good. Is a sheet. It's 50 Just, by yes. 3 feet, I think.
So thank you. It comes thank you very
in a
much.
Package, you know, a sheet of stuff.
Janie, you're a genius.
Ray, you.
Thank
Back
you.
Back to you and Joe and Ellen and everybody. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you, and we'll see you next time for sure. Let's go to Peter in New Baltimore. Peter.
Hi, good afternoon. How are you?
Hey.
Good.
Hey, can you help me out? I've got some voles that moved into the yard in the neighborhood about 2 years ago. I have two questions for you. Are they after the roots of the plants, or are they after the grubs and the worms?
Voles are after the roots.
Yeah.
They're root eaters.
Yeah, we want to make sure that, we're not talking moles. Just there is a difference between moles and voles, and I'm sure you know that. But I just want to point that out because I get a lot of questions at the Arboretum, and a lot of times people are talking moles when they're really talking voles. Moles are grub eaters.
Okay, but voles are root eaters.
And they'll also girdle stems. Voles cause a lot of damage. Moles are actually after
not
the grubs
so much,
that eat your turf. Yeah, I kind of like
the moles.
Moles tend to cause disturbances usually within your lawn.
Yeah.
So if you're focused on your lawn, moles tend to be the thing that is bothering you. If you're focused on your garden, it tends to be voles.
Interesting.
They're a massacre in the garden. They've destroyed all our hostas. They're digging up the lawn, and just about every flower I have, including the mums, they're knocking down.
Well, yeah, that sounds like voles, though.
Yeah, I would say in general it's voles.
I tried the poison peanuts, and it worked for a little bit. It's like somebody went back and told everybody, don't eat the peanuts anymore. So they stopped eating them, and they're rampant again. So I wrapped the peanuts in a little bit of peanut butter, and it seems that they were taking them. But I looked in the hole the other night. I keep a brick over there, tunnel. And I looked in, and lo and behold, all the peanut butter was gone, and the peanut was still there. Hmm. Do you have any recommendations on what they'll go after?
What the first thing I would kind of ask you about is they tend to move around a lot. So if you've had this same hole and they're just always there, then that's a little unusual. You may have the mother load of voles there, but I don't know about you, Fred, but disturbing the area so. Your hosta bed tends to be sort of permanent. You put in your hostas. You don't have to do a whole lot. They right. are there for quite a while. But if they're eating them, getting in there and cultivating around those hostas, really just being aggressive about disturbing the area tends to get the voles to move out. They like areas that you haven't been for a while, the place where you maybe piled up your compost or left a few bags of something, and they're hiding under there. So disturbing them seems to be the first thing to do. Frequently cultivated area or worked area usually doesn't have a vole problem. And you may want to just try that for a little while.
Very interesting.
In terms of a poison, I don't have another one. That zinc phosphide active ingredient, I think, is what both New York and Massachusetts Extension Services tend to suggest as the active ingredient for whatever bait you use. But, it's so awkward to be able to try and bait those guys properly. There is a thing out there, it's a product, if you're interested, called, it's often called Mole Max, we're getting confused again with moles, but it is a castor bean derivative, that ricin derivative that is suggested that you apply it as a granular application to your garden and that repels them.
Yeah, another thing that another product that works wonders too is a product called a cat.
No, cats are good too.
They wreak havoc on moles.
And
voles and chipmunks.
All right. And rabbits.
Yep, they really if you don't have a pet, consider adopting a cat.
Okay.
The outdoor cats that my mom has been a perennial gardener for years. She's always had an outdoor cat. I call it an outdoor cat because it lives out more than it lives in.
Yeah.
Wonderful vole, and natural and environmentally friendly, too.
Well, that's a fun way to end the show. Listen, we're done with this for today and for this month. Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery and Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum. Gentlemen, as always, a splendid job. Support for WAMC comes from Stories Nursery, Freehold, New York, a gardener's destination featuring trees, shrubs, water garden plants, and many perennials, open Monday through Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., storiesnursery.com. Lake George Kayak, a kayak and canoe resource providing sales, rentals, lessons, and tours. Every day's a demo day, lakegeorgekayak.com. and Ballantine Communications, Pleasant Valley, New York, providing sound, lighting, and video event production support for 25 years in the tri-state area. 845-635-8606. Thanks to Christy Carton for answering the phones. Thanks to Zachary T. Malloy, who handled the controls and did such a wonderful job during the fun drive. I'm Ray Graff, Moyers & Company tomorrow. Medical Monday next week, mental health issues with Dr. Eric Plakin. Stay tuned now for a news update.